Welcome to AttorneyBusters.com. This is Gene Forte, and we're going to have a great show here today for you. Well, for my first-time listeners, first of all, I'd like to tell you, I am not an attorney. I don't provide you any legal advice or legal opinions, but the information I'm going to share for you and share with you is extremely valuable to you, so don't be closing that dial off or turning that dial just because I am not an attorney. In fact, that's one of the biggest assets I have going for me right now. What I'd like to talk to you about today, and this show is going to be running very, very quickly, I want to tell you, for my first-time listeners, let me also say, I started AttorneyBusters.com because I discovered that there is absolutely corruption within our local court systems in the Monterey area. We have attorneys and judges not ruling according to law, and also formulating basically good old boys clubs, whereby the things they do, they just feel that they cannot be held accountable. In fact, most people in our country today believe that attorneys and judges cannot be held accountable, and the prosecutors that do not prosecute judges out there, such as the DA's department, or individuals connected to state bars and other organizations or attorney general's offices, they're totally immune from any type of prosecution themselves. I'm going to be playing a number of clips, and these clips I'm going to be playing involve a man and a story that's going on in Wisconsin, a man by the name of Stephen Magritz. And this man has been sentenced, is going to be sentenced actually this coming week on January 17th, to potentially 70 years in prison. Now, for the last about 3 weeks, I've been playing clips that I've had with interviews with Mr. Magritz and other individuals connected to the case. But today, we're going to have the prosecutor's side of the story and listen to what the prosecutors have to say. But before we get into those, I want to play for you what a lot of individuals truly think happens and what we cannot do out there. This is a clip from one of my callers a few weeks ago.
Now, the fact of the matter is, rightfully or wrongfully, most public officials are very well covered by immunity statutes. They're covered for what they do, what they don't do, what they say.
Now, that is correct. This is what most individuals feel out there, and essentially, these prosecutors do have immunity. Now, I'm going to be playing clips in kind of a rapid fire here, and I'll put some commentary in between it as we go along, with an individual who is the Deputy Attorney General out in Wisconsin. This man's name is Mr. Roy Corte. That's K-O-R-T-E. And this man was the individual that actually prosecuted Mr. Magritz, an individual that I said is currently online for 70 years in prison, for what he was known to be doing was called paper terrorism. And it was actually connected in a way to the USA Patriot Act. Let's hear some of these clips, and let me tell you how I started off the conversation with Mr. Corte.
I don't want you to feel that I'm trying to harpoon you here. I will say this, if you've done something improper or wrong, I will try to harpoon you, but if you haven't, I won't.
All right, so I'm letting Mr. Corte know that I'm going to give him the opportunity to say things to also explain his side of the story here, and I'm not going after him just because he's an attorney, thinking that he's a bad attorney. Let's find out what Mr. Corte said about Mr. Magritz being prosecuted under the USA Patriot Act.
Mr. Magritz was referred to as a paper terrorist, and now you're telling me that he was not prosecuted under the USA Patriot Act. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's a federal law. I have no authority over to deal with federal statutes any way, shape, or form.
So Mr. Corte is saying that no, he wasn't prosecuted under the USA Patriot Act because that is a federal act, and what he really got prosecuted under was a state act. But how did this get turned around to be utilizing a task force? Let's hear further.
Was it done by a task force that was set up after the USA Patriot Act came into?
Yes, the unit, if you will, was created officially in name after September 11th. However, law enforcement officers associated with the Department of Justice and myself have been involved in similar cases prior to that creation of that unit. We didn't have a name, but we were prosecuting and investigating anyway.
So Mr. Corte is saying, well, Yes, this task force we have was created after the 9/11 incident, but we were prosecuting people for these acts prior to that time period. However, what Mr. James Doyle, who was the Attorney General in Wisconsin at that time, was running under as a campaign to become now the governor of Wisconsin, was that he was tough on terrorism. So even though Mr. Magritz was not tried, let's say, legally under the USA Patriot Act, what he was tied up with and what he was trying to go ahead and be thrown into was the same pot of terrorism. And it sounded real good to get votes. Now, I asked Mr. Cordy, what about the 70 years that Mr. Magritz is online for?
Do you think that Mr. Magritz should be sentenced to 70 years in prison?
Mr. Magritz is facing a total of 7 counts. By the way, he could have been charged with 37. It had been 370 years. He was charged with 7. He is facing out of that a maximum of 35 years of confinement plus 35 years of extended supervision, which essentially is parole. Okay, if someone were to violate extended supervision, it's conceivable that they could serve that additional 35 years. So in one sense, yes, he's facing 70 years. Just as in many cases, those are the maximum penalties provided for by law. What Mr. Magritz will receive will ultimately be up to the judge who conducts the sentencing hearing.
So essentially, Mr. Cordy is saying, gee, we went easy on this Mr. Magritz. I mean, he could have been online for 370 years. But what did Mr. Magritz really do? And we're going to get into those items further through these interviews today. But I'll tell you that what Mr. Magritz was involved in doing was essentially he was filing documents trying to say that individuals being the corporate counsel of Keneally, Mr. Keneally of Ozaukee County in Wisconsin, that the corporate counsel there had taken documents out of a court file that would have caused Mr. Magritz not to have his property foreclosed upon him, that was foreclosed upon him by the Ozaukee County, and then not sold at a foreclosure sale, but actually turned into a park. Now, Mr. Magritz had owned approximately $30,000 for back taxes, but the property was worth somewhere close to $600,000 to $1 million. But the county decided not to sell it and to keep it, and Mr. Magritz became very upset about this. And when we get back, we're going to be talking about court file documents disappearing and other things that Mr. Cordy thinks maybe are not that important. This is Attorney Busters. This is Gene Forte. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The man that attorney said, we should do anything to get rid of this maniacal appearing gentleman? Who is the man that they called chameleon-like and volcanic? Who is the man an attorney once said in court, he's sophisticated, intelligent, and evil? Find out why corrupt attorneys fear him so. Listen to attorneybusters.com, hosted by Gene Forte. Sunday afternoons from 3 to 4. AttorneyBusters.com's radio program was created by Gene Forte to expose judicial corruption. We at AttorneyBusters.com believe that we are all entitled to fairness in our courts and from the officers of the court, including judges and attorneys. If you agree with us or enjoy our program, please help us continue to pay for our airtime by sending a contribution to 316 Mid Valley Center, number 179, Carmel, California, 93923, or call us at 888-211-6035. Again, 316 Mid Valley Center, number 179, Carmel, California, 93923, or call us at 888-211-6035. Or you can make a contribution through our website, attorneybusters.com. Any amount is greatly appreciated and will help to keep us on the air. Please support us.
Welcome back to AttorneyBusters.com. This is Gene 40. We're going to be continuing to play some clips of an interview I did with Mr. Roy Corte, the Assistant Deputy Attorney General from Wisconsin that was involved in prosecuting a case against a Mr. Stephen A. Magritz. And Mr. Magritz was referred to in the press out there as being a paper terrorist. And this comes again to other interviews we had with the Osaki Press that we played last week, that essentially the press was not telling Mr. Magritz's side of the story, and he was getting grouped together in this organization called the Posse Comitatus or Militias. Let's play some interviews with Mr. Corte concerning those items.
Why did this start to take on the profile of this man being part of some type of organized group or militia?
Well, I'm not attributing to Mr. Magritz's membership in any organization. I really don't care what organization he may or may not belong to. That's his choice. I'm looking at his conduct. I'm looking at what he actually did. I'm looking at the documents he filed, and I'm looking at those documents which have various characteristics of documents that have been used by posse organizations in Wisconsin and elsewhere. You know, does that make him a posse member? I don't know. I don't care. I'm just looking at what he ultimately, the conduct that he engaged in against, 37 public officials.
Now, one of the individuals, again, that was a key player inside of this case was a man by the name of Mr. Dennis Keneally, who was the corporate counsel for Osaki County. And Mr. Keneally essentially was an individual that had contacted the DA's office there locally in the Osaki area and told him about Mr. Magritz. In fact, the Osaki Press, an interview I did with Mr. Bill Shannon from that area, said that essentially Mr. Keneally had dropped a dime on Mr. Magritz. And from there, it started to snowball this effect that this word terrorism came up. And in fact, television commercials that were done in the area of Wisconsin linked Mr. Magritz in ways to essentially the terrorism, international terrorism, that took place on 9/11 by having these buildings dissolve, the World Trade Center, and then leading into a base of Mr. Magritz. Now, the whole issue that takes place at our court systems at times today is that there is a great smut and smear campaign at times engineered by the counsels on the other side. Let's hear what Mr. Corte says next regarding Mr. Magritz and these connections to groups, possibly.
None of these letters were physically threatening. The words.
Physically threatening? No. Did he threaten to kill anybody? I didn't see anything in that. He threatened to file liens against them and take other extrajudicial steps against him? Sure. And, did he show up at the courthouse with groups of people wearing their camouflage clothes? Sure.
Oh, he did. No, I didn't know this.
This is his wife, and he's been, associated with various groups of people who have shown up at other cases that I've prosecuted.
Now, what Mr. Corte is saying, well, he hasn't seen anything that's, let's say, physically threatening, but this man does show up at the courthouse in camouflage gear. Well, when somebody tells you that, what first comes into my mind, and I don't know if it does yours, but gee, camouflage gear, is this some type of militia? But that's just a gentle smutball, I believe, or a kind of coloring of a situation. Now, the issue that Mr. Magritz was sending these letters out that we just talked about in this clip, Mr. Magritz was sending letters to the county officials out there stating that if they proceeded to foreclose upon his property, that he was going to hold them responsible, financially responsible for damages, because he had been telling them that court files were leaving the court clerk's office, and in addition to that, files and papers that were supposed to be in those files were not there, and that he believed they had been taken out by this Mr. Keneally. Let me go to the next clip regarding Mr. Keneally and a conversation that I had with Mr. Corte, telling the conversation I had with Mr. Keneally.
And Mr. Keneally told me and confirmed to me the court files do not leave the clerk's office. However, when they were here, they'd only stay here a day or two. That is an admission from Mr. Keneally that those court files were at Mr. Keneally's office. Mr. Magwitz was saying that documents that he had filed in the clerk's office would have shown and prevented him from being foreclosed because he was making a claim on the property.
He's wrong. It's simply incorrect. Mr. Magwitz has filed voluminous documents with a variety of people. None of them constituted any legal response that one would recognize. Mr. Magwitz had ample opportunity over a period of years to pay his taxes. He chose to play games.
What Mr. Cordy is not addressing, he's not addressing the issue about these court files that are leaving the clerk of the court and going over to Mr. Keneally's office. But what he wants to move forward to talk about is, well, Mr. Magwitz had filed voluminous documents across these years. That is not totally correct, and that was not the question that I was asking him. I was saying Mr. Keneally had admitted to me in an interview that, yes, those clerk court files were getting into Mr. Keneally's office. And just because Mr. Keneally is the corporate counsel of Osaki County, that does not mean that that individual, Mr. Keneally, can have those clerk files in his office. That cannot take place. Let's go on further with Mr. Cordy.
How a court clerk could allow those files to go to Mr. Keneally. If that did take place, wouldn't that be something that would concern you and the Attorney General's office?
Not necessarily, no.
So, Mr. Cordy is saying, well, he doesn't really care if there's documents or clerk files going from Mr. Keneally's office or from the court clerk's office to Mr. Keneally. It really wasn't a concern of his. And you know what? That just doesn't happen in Wisconsin. Because I was essentially involved in a case over in the Monterey area, and what then took place is there were documents that and connections at this court clerk's office that were suspicious to me. Let me play a brief clip of a conversation that one of my attorneys told me about an opposing counsel, a Mr. McCarthy, at the courthouse here in Monterey.
Obviously, McCarthy had somebody at the courthouse that informed him of the filing of the dismissal.
So now, over in Monterey area, we also have an issue of court clerks contacting opposing counsel somehow behind everyone's back and letting them know about documents that are being filed or not being filed. Let's move on to Mr. Cordy again.
If there were files, if
I've seen the documents, there's nothing in there that would have prevented the foreclosure. Mr. Magwitz chose not to participate in those proceedings. He had notice. He knew what was going on. There's an assumption in your question that there's some miraculous document that Mr. Magwitz filed which would have ended all of this. That's not the way it works,
well,
and that's not what happened.
Well, you know, it's kind of unusual. If there's no documents inside of that file or documents were missing, how could Mr. Cordy even know if a document was missing or not? Let's move on to another clip of Mr. Cordy and I having this discussion about these missing documents.
You mean the court clerk would be allowed to give the court clerk files to Mr. Keneally to take to his office?
You're distinguishing something. I don't know the details of what you're talking about. I have seen the documents in the court files. If a court clerk gets something, that doesn't mean it's filed. I drop something off at the court clerk's office, it doesn't mean anything other than you've delivered it. Okay? It's not filed until it's been accepted by the clerk of court and stamped and accordingly entered into the records. If a court clerk, I mean, I can't go down to the clerk of court's office and give them a stack of newspapers and say, here, file this, okay? Or some other, you know, weird document. Think of some example. It doesn't really matter. Clerks don't have to take that for filing. They may take that document, and I'm just assuming this may have been the one way that things happened. I don't know. May have taken the documents to legal counsel for the county and saying, what is this? What do I do with this? Is this something that should be filed? That could have been one alternative. I'm not aware of anyone unlawfully removing concealing or hiding any public record. Mr. Magritz has been very willing to apparently make such allegations, but yet he chooses to not provide any details. He chooses not to participate in the proceedings, saying that there is no authority over him by any state.
Okay, so again, what Mr. Corti is doing, he's not really addressing the issue of the item that I talked to Mr. Keneally, and Mr. Keneally told me that the clerk court files were at his office. But Mr. Corti is running around that question. Let me ask him this question a little bit differently this time.
If clerk court files are going to the corporate counsel, Mr. Keneally, the opposing counsel against this gentleman, Mr. Magritz, if they're stamping those things, received, or for putting them on a docket sheet, but then not having them in the file, it doesn't seem appropriate, does it?
Did you hear what Mr. Corti's answer was? It's simply a gasp. Let's listen to it one more time.
If clerk court files are going to the corporate counsel, Mr. Keneally, the opposing counsel against this gentleman, Mr. Magritz, if they're stamping those things, received, or for putting them on a docket sheet, but then not having them in the file, it doesn't seem appropriate, does it?
All right, so that's about the best answer I've gotten so far, but I'll push on with this again.
If I was involved in a litigation and I went down and I filed documents at the court clerk's office and that court clerk took those files and gave it to the opposing counsel...
I have no information that
documents happened.
Were then not filed, okay, number one. Number two, I guess, not to be flippant, but that does not give Mr. Magritz a right to violate the law.
Again... It doesn't seem that Mr. Corti wants to address the issue about Mr. Keneally having the clerk court files there. I asked him again.
How a court clerk could allow those files to go to Mr. Keneally. If that did take place, wouldn't that be something that would concern you and the Attorney General's office?
Not necessarily, no.
All right, when we come back, I'm going to be playing some more clips, but we have Mr. Again, Corti, the Assistant Attorney General, saying, well, you know, court clerk files going to a counsel is not important. The next clips we're going to be playing when I get back are going to be another individual, but let me tell you why he wants to not have his name used.
Why would you not want to have your name used?
Fear.
One more time.
Why would you not want to have your name used?
Fear.
And you know what? That is what's stopping many Americans today from standing up and exposing the corruption that we have inside of our courtrooms right now with attorneys that are doing things improperly, such as very potentially a Mr. Keneally, and then a Attorney General or Assistant Attorney General not wanting to address the issue or look into the matter, so these things totally go unchecked. And when individuals stand out and try to say something about it, they can end up in a situation where they are accused of paper terrorism and online for 70 years. Well, at least he didn't get 370 years. Thank you so much, Mr. Roy Corti. This is AttorneyBusters.com and Gene Forte. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Thank you.
Every year, the United Negro College Fund helps thousands of students go to college. But for everyone...
The lawyers are chasing the ambulances. But who's chasing the lawyers?
You don't know how much these attorneys right now are digging into your pocketbook every single day. While you're sleeping, while you're awake.
You think they're actually representing your interests.
Attorneys commit crimes in litigation.
Those crimes are ignored.
There are laws on the books to protect you, but you know what? Those laws are not worth anything if attorneys will not prosecute cases against other attorneys.
It's Gene Forte and AttorneyBusters.com.
Save a place for me. Save a space for me.
Every year, the United Negro College Fund helps thousands of students go to college. But for everyone we help, there's one we can't. Not without the funds.
Save a place for me.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. Save a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Call 1-800-332-UNCF.
A message from the Ad Council.
He walks in the treetop all day long, hopping and a bopping and a singing his song. All the little birdies on a Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rock and
robin, let it blow, rock and robin, let it blow, 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 rock and robin, cause we're really gonna rock tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee.
There's nothing wrong with reusing good material. So the next time you go shopping, buy stuff you can reuse. You create less waste, reduce pollution, and save energy and resources. Not to mention, come off sounding very cool. Buy smart, waste less, save more.
For more information, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
Somebody once told me the world is gonna roll me. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed.
Welcome back to AttorneyBusters.com. This is Gene 40. And we've been going through some clips of interviews that I've had with a Mr. Roy Cordy, who was the Assistant Deputy Attorney General in Wisconsin that prosecuted a man by the name of Mr. Stephen Magritz, who is currently online for being sentenced to 70 years in prison for what has been called paper terrorism. A little bit later in the show, we're going to be playing an interview with Mr. and Mrs. Catherine Cryer of the Cryer Report in Courtroom TV regarding her new book that's on the bestsellers list called The Case Against Lawyers. And believe me, this case that I'm talking about right now regarding Stephen A. Magritz and these attorneys out in Wisconsin should maybe be a part in a chapter of that book. Let's continue where I was playing some clips of showing how Mr. Cordy simply was not willing to address the issue of Mr. Keneally having these court clerk files inside of his office. That is not something that should be taking place. But we have an individual by the name of, well, I can't say his name, because he fears for his name. But this man was sitting during a meeting of the county supervisors in Osage County, and this is what he had to say about this Mr. Dennis Keneally, who was the corporate counsel out there.
He was saying that Mr. Keneally had those documents, but that he's hiding them. She confronted him right there in front of the board members. He didn't seem very kind towards her at all. And it's kind of a gloating demeanor, condescending towards her. He wouldn't even talk to her or acknowledge her as being in the room. He just sat there while she was addressing him and said nothing. And she was pleading with the county board members regarding her property and what she said her husband had filed trying to obtain her property.
Well, you know, reasons why I think individuals such as Mr. Keneally or attorneys that are involved inside of, let's say, county positions are able to gloat at times is because they know that there's going to be an attorney general or an assistant attorney general above them that's not going to do anything. And again, this comes back to an issue that Mr. Magritz believes that his property was essentially stolen by the county officials because they wanted to turn it into a park. Yes, he owed back taxes, but don't you think it would have been appropriate if they would have allowed Mr. Magritz to either sell that property or the county sell the property and give Mr. Magritz back the balance of that money instead of keeping it for a park? Let's see what Mr. Cordy says about the questions concerning a park.
They foreclose on a piece of property and
they have the right to decide either to sell it or to keep it.
And they decide in this case to keep it because essentially it would be good for a park that was next to them.
I guess that's the decision they made. You can direct those questions to Ozaukee County.
All right,
the prosecutor.
All right. Direct those questions to Ozaukee County. But let's talk about these letters that Mr. Magritz was not getting any response to or actually notices he was sending to these county councils or corporate council and also to county supervisors.
Do you think in hindsight potentially or possibly that maybe the county supervisors should have responded to those letters
Do you have any idea how long Mr. Magritz has been doing this to public officials in southeastern Wisconsin? How many documents he has sent to people?
No.
A lot. For a long time. It's no longer worth the effort to communicate, I suppose, would be my impression, perhaps, from these public officials, to communicate with Mr. Magritz, because what happens when you do? I'll tell you what happens when you do. He sends those same documents back to you with various notations on them, accepted for value, you know, so on and so forth. What's the point? He doesn't, you know, it's kind of futile after a while, and why bother? You know, he can describe them notices, letters, whatever. I mean, they're legally meaningless. I mean, he makes demands and threats in there about taking certain steps and actions. But again, you know, he wants to adopt his own self-created legal system? Be my guest. But then you're going to have to accept the consequences of that.
All right. Well, you know what, though? Essentially, I will tell you this. Mr. Magritz never got one response from any of these individuals at any point in time. So you know what he does? He keeps on sending them letters asking for it. Let's go back to this individual that wanted to rename nameless to hear what he said about what the county supervisors were doing at this meeting.
There was no sympathy from the county board of supervisors regarding this person losing her property and her husband being put in jail.
No, it was rather, from my perspective, a group of vultures divvying up the carcass for their own end. And there was no care, no concern towards her whatsoever.
Let's move further to another clip about what Mr. Cordy had to say about these complaints about public officials that Mr. Magritz was doing.
What are the groups of people has he been associated with that...
I don't know their names. I mean, we don't sit around and track people down and figure out who they are. I've seen Mr. Magritz at other court proceedings involving other defendants in the company of other people.
What are the type of cases were those? Were those ones you were handling?
Cases involving simulating legal process, phony criminal complaints against public officials served on them, or other similar type documents.
Phony criminal complaints about public officials, that almost seems almost like an oxymoron, doesn't it? In other words, who is going to take these cases up against these public officials right now? And because of the USA Patriot Act, if any of us try to bring any information out about public officials, you know what? You just might end up with jail time. And I will tell you another issue. This is a coming back to Monterey area, something that I was personally involved in. This is what my attorney told me that he knew a judge had done, but did he do anything about this? Absolutely not.
I understand the interrelationship, and I understand that that's a felony to do that. To compromise a civil claim under threat of a lawsuit, of a criminal prosecution, is a felony.
And doesn't it seem that that's what they're doing here, Jim? Nolan had thought, who's supposed to be a very good criminal attorney over there in San Jose, he says somebody's got to tell the judge he can't do this.
Well,
that's kind of like a gasp, right? No, they will not address the issue, and a judge here did commit a felony, and I'm hot on his tail right now. But let me go and tell you next what happens when you try to tell an attorney about trying to protect your rights regarding this issue, a guy that I paid $50,000 to.
Why they're pissed at me, it's because you filed that complaint naming everybody as bad people.
No, I did not.
Let
me
make it clear, Wayne, that I'm being punished because I represent you.
So your attorney now tells you he's being punished because he's representing me in a matter, but essentially I've uncovered some corruption here. Isn't this what similarly happened to Mr. Magritz? Let me tell you what the attorney tells you then that he's got to do to you.
Are they doing it to me because of me or because of you? And will they stop doing it to me, okay?
If you throw me to the lion.
Yeah.
So my own attorney will throw me to the lions. Well, again, this is not isolated to any one area of a country. Not any one area of a country. And let me go further to go ahead and show you essentially how this is going to start to tie in to the Attorney General's office again back in Wisconsin with another case that essentially Mr. James Doyle's sister was involved with. But I wanted to ask Mr. Cordy some questions regarding some information I'd received about what kind of cases he's brought into.
Mr. Brown and Mr. Magritz have said that Mr. James Doyle utilizes you to prosecute special cases because any case where there are direct accusations against him regarding some underhanded criminal conduct, he brings you in to prosecute the case.
Absolutely not. This is, for example, in Mr. Maggart's case, we were asked to do so by the local officials, including the local district attorney. Our office agreed, certainly Mr. Dole agreed to that. And by the way, this case had absolutely, positively nothing to do with the now Governor Jim Doyle and Mr. Maggart's. Throughout the proceedings, until perhaps when Mr. Maggart's was charged, Mr. Doyle had nothing whatsoever to do with this case. His name never arose. Mr. Doyle doesn't have anything to do with the assessment of local property taxes. So that's simply false.
Well, let me go ahead and bring up another issue as to why maybe James Doyle was interested inside of Mr. Maggart's, because it involved an issue where Mr. Maggart's was actually subpoenaed to give testimony inside of a case regarding Kathy Doyle, that is the sister of James Doyle, in a litigation that Kathy Doyle filed against a group of pro-lifers. Listen to this.
Did you have any involvement in an incident regarding Mrs. Kathy Doyle?
No, not had anything to do with that.
Didn't have anything to do with it. Well, let's go a little bit farther regarding this.
Did you have any knowledge of Corty being involved in that case?
Well, he was around the Milwaukee area prosecuting pro-lifers right and left, but I have no knowledge of him having anything to do with the lawsuit.
All right, so this was the individual that wanted to remain anonymous at this time, saying that Mr. Corty was involved in prosecuting a bunch of pro-lifers. Well, this case of Kathy Doyle was essentially against a group of pro-lifers called WVCY, and it regards an issue where they had made statements essentially alleging that Kathy Doyle had kicked a 7-year-old girl that was kneeling down praying during a anti-abortion clinic showing.
The Attorney General's office here in Wisconsin had brought a state injunction against pro-lifers, which actually infringed on our First Amendment rights and forbid us to even stand on a public sidewalk outside an abortion clinic and hand out literature to those who were coming. It was under that state injunction that I spent 4 months in jail for.
Was that case prosecuted by a man by the name of Roy Corty?
Yes.
Oh, so Mr. Corty is involved in prosecuting a few related cases here. Let's hear another clip about how this man was named as a defendant in a case.
The lawsuit was a libel suit. It was originally what it started out as. She sued me and several others for talking about this incident prior to any charges being filed. There never were any charges filed. They put a special prosecutor on the case. He decided not to file any charges. And so I ended up in the lawsuit because I had made statements regarding the incident, or the alleged incident. And that's how I ended up in the lawsuit.
Do you think an attorney general in Wisconsin has enough power or influence to stop a special prosecutor for proceeding on investigating a case regarding his sister being allegedly kicking a 7-year-old girl in the face?
When I arrived on the scene, there was quite a few people there. Then I had heard that Ward Engelke's daughter had been kicked, and I saw the girl. She definitely had a fresh contusion on her face. Who struck her or what she was struck by, I have no idea.
Did the girl tell you anything that day when you looked at her face? Did she tell you that she had been kicked by Ms. Kathy Doyle?
You know, I can't recall if she told me that, or if her dad told me that, I don't recall.
That's the individual that said he feared. And as you get through this, you're going to find later what dollar amounts that Kathy Doyle may have received on this case.
Were you there when that police officer arrived?
Yes. He informed the police officer that his daughter told him that she was kicked, that he had not seen the incident, the alleged incident, and that, but his daughter was saying that this had happened to her.
When we come back from the break, I'm going to be playing more clips of this conversation I have with Mr. Roy Corty, the Assistant Attorney General or Deputy Attorney General out there in Wisconsin. And we're going to talk more about what he knew about the Kathleen Doyle incident and what really was taking place. Was this group being singled out by the issues out there regarding pro-lifers? Very possibly so. And is this a payback to Mr. Maggart's at this time? We don't know. This is AttorneyBusters.com. This is Gene 40. A very, very interesting program, don't you think? Stay tuned. Come back.
Well, the years start coming and they don't stop coming. Fed to the rules and I hit the ground running. Didn't make sense not to live for fun. Your brain gets smart. The doors are-
The lawyers are chasing the ambulances.
But who's chasing the lawyers?
You don't know how much these attorneys right now are digging into your pocketbook every single day. While you're sleeping, while you're awake.
You think they're actually representing your interests.
Attorneys commit crimes in litigation.
Those crimes are ignored.
There are laws on the books to protect you, but you know what? Those laws are not worth anything if attorneys will not prosecute cases against other attorneys.
It's Gene Forte and AttorneyBusters.com.
AttorneyBusters.com's radio program was created by Gene Forte to expose judicial corruption. We at AttorneyBusters.com believe that we are all entitled to fairness in our courts and from the officers of the court, including judges and attorneys. If you agree with us or enjoy our program, please help us continue to pay for our airtime by sending a contribution to 316 Mid Valley Center, number 179. Carmel, California, 93923, or call us at 888-211-6035. Again, 316 Mid-Valley Center, number 179, Carmel, California, 93923, or call us at 888-211-6035. Or you can make a contribution through our website, attorneybusters.com. Any amount is greatly appreciated and will help to keep us on the air. Please support us.
Welcome back, folks, to AttorneyBusters.com. This is Gene Forte, and I'm playing a number of clips here today. But I had an interview with Mr. Roy Cordy, the Attorney General, Assistant Attorney General in Wisconsin, who was involved in prosecuting a case against a man by the name of Mr. Stephen Magritz. And now I'm also playing clips as to how there was another case out there in Wisconsin involving Kathy Doyle, that is James Doyle's sister, that she allegedly had kicked a 7-year-old girl in the face in front of an abortion clinic, which led to a lawsuit. Now, also, this was sometime back in about 1993 through about 1997-98. But the link I'm trying to make here is that in 1999, in September of 1999, this man, Stephen A. Magritz, was actually subpoenaed to give a deposition testimony in the case of Kathleen M. Doyle and Carl Rolich, plaintiffs, versus the Youth for America National, Youth for America Wisconsin, VCY, and a number of other defendants that are pro-lifers. Now, gee, I wonder if James Doyle remembered who Mr. Magritz was, but do you think Mr. Cordy knew who Mr. Magritz was when he brought him up again for these charges that they referred to him as paper terrorism? Let's hear.
Did Kathy Doyle kick women protester in front of the anti-abortion clinic?
As far as I know, no.
All right.
I believe that there might have been some civil lawsuits brought by her against people who allege that, and I think there was a settlement of some sort. But beyond that, I'm not sure.
Well, wait a second. This individual that also had told me that he wants to have his name not used also said this.
The Attorney General's office here in Wisconsin had brought a state injunction against pro-lifers, which actually infringed on our First Amendment rights and forbid us to even stand on a public sidewalk outside an abortion clinic and hand out literature to those who were coming. It was under that state injunction that I spent 4 months in jail for.
Was that case prosecuted by a man by the name of Roy Cordy?
Yes.
Now, that man that we just heard speaking was actually a defendant in the lawsuit of Kathleen M. Doyle versus him, that again, Mr. Magritz was also subpoenaed to give deposition. So do you think that Mr. Cordy, being the assistant deputy attorney general out there, knew at that time about possibly these issues concerning Mrs. Doyle and the issues concerning the kick in the face and all this? Let's find out what happened to this lawsuit that was filed against the pro-lifers out there.
The lawsuit was settled by VCY paying a judgment to Catherine Doyle. I don't know what the dollar amount is, ranging anywhere from a few hundred thousand dollars to $1 million.
Now, how did that take place, I wonder? Well, let me play for you another clip that this individual told me about the father of the girl that had gotten kicked.
Have you ever seen the affidavit that he signed?
I saw the affidavit. Being a defendant in the case, I received a copy of it.
It's one of those lukewarm type of affidavits?
Exactly. And it clearly pointed the finger at VCY and put them in a bad light.
How did it point the finger at ACY?
It almost made it out like they were the one prodding him to make these allegations. And I was there the day it happened. I saw he was the one who started the allegations. So it was like, you know, him and his daughter. And so I just found that very disingenuous.
Now, why would you think that a man that originally had stated that his daughter had gotten kicked in the face by Kathy Doyle, that is the Attorney General's sister, why do you think a man that originally stated that after he got sued, he essentially backed out of that lawsuit? Well, let's see what this person said about that.
Did it surprise you that that affidavit was signed at that time?
Oh, very much so. Here they were, him and his daughter were making these allegations, and then they opt out of the lawsuit and point the finger at someone else.
Do you think this ward and his daughter got out of this lawsuit because he simply feared that they were going to make his life miserable through this litigation for a few years?
Yeah, I don't know why he did. I've never talked with him about it, but just knowing human nature, I know people dread lawsuits, and probably your average person would do just about anything to get out of one.
Now, I have been trying to arrange an interview with the father of the girl that allegedly had been kicked in the face. And what has been coming back to me, the individual says that, well, he will give me a call, but then he doesn't by giving me a call because essentially there's a lot of he had to sign a non-disclosure agreement essentially to get out of that lawsuit. And I understand that the girl truly wants to come forward and say what happened. But again, there's that word fear out there. Let's find out more about this Mr. Cordy as far as his prosecution of other individuals.
Were there other individuals in your group, when I say your group, these pro-lifers, that were prosecuted in a similar way by Roy Cordy?
Yes.
And all this stemmed from your protest against the abortion clinics?
That's correct, right. Some people were jailed for actually sitting in front of the doors. Many others were jailed. In fact, I believe the majority were jailed for simply passing out literature in front of the abortion clinic while standing on a public sidewalk.
Well, gee, Mr. Cordy, I believe from very early stages of this situation, said he never really kind of like formulated any opinions of groups out there. He doesn't care what group Mr. Magwitz was involved with. But I wonder when Mr. Cordy was prosecuting Mr. Magwitz in this, did he ever talk to the law firm that attempted to subpoena Mr. Magwitz in the case of Kathy Doyle versus VCY and these other pro-lifers? Let's go on farther here about some things that was told to me about Mr. Doyle.
Oh, James Doyle clearly went out of his way to prosecute and persecute pro-lifers in 92 and 93. He was given the Voice for Choice Award by Planned Parenthood because of his efforts. When you read over the list of those who gave to his campaign, it's a who's who of Hall of Fame for the pro-abortion crowd. And I think he was prosecuting and persecuting the pro-lifers here in Milwaukee as a political debt to those who gave to his campaign. And he clearly is a man who believes that there's no abortion that he wouldn't like. He supports abortion fully.
Now, either side of a situation, and I will tell you, be it pro-lifer, be it pro-choice, the issue here is, do you think that an attorney general would solicit campaign funds and get campaigns from funds from individuals that are, let's say, these pro-choice people, and not want to pay them back somehow and helping them against the pro-lifers? Oh, what do you think? Here, let's hear this next clip.
Why was Catherine Doyle at these abortion clinic protests?
I don't know why she was there other than she was part of the group that was known as the Clinic Defense Coalition. So she was there that side of the fence while I was on the other side of the fence, there to defend the preborn from being killed.
Let's go to another clip, because we're almost out of time, but let's go to another clip about what Mr. Cordy had done in this area.
How many of your friends or your members of your church or other churches you have around you have been put in jail by the Attorney General's Office of Wisconsin for pro-life activity?
Oh, probably at least a couple dozen, if not more.
All right, well, let's go to this final roundup of a couple of clips here. Let's see again, what did I tell Mr. Cordy that Mr. Keneally had told me?
And Mr. Keneally told me and confirmed to me the court files do not leave the clerk's office. However, when they were here, they'd only stay here a day or two. That is an admission from Mr. Keneally that those court files were at Mr. Keneally's office. Mr. Magritz was saying that documents that he had filed in the clerk's office would have shown and prevented him from being foreclosed because he was making a claim on the property.
He's wrong. It's simply incorrect. Mr. Magritz has filed voluminous.
Okay, but let's see what Mr. Cordy then says again when I push that answer for a question to him again.
If clerk court files are going to the corporate counsel, Mr. Keneally, the opposing counsel against this gentleman, Mr. Magritz, if they're stamping those things received or for putting them on a docket sheet but then not having them in the file, it doesn't seem appropriate, does it?
Like, so who cares? Well, let's see what Mr. Cordy then says about what Mr. Magritte's response is.
If I was involved in a litigation and I went down and I filed documents at the court clerk's office and that court clerk took those files and gave it to the opposing counsel.
Well, I have no information that
happened.
Were then not filed, okay, number one. Number two, I guess, not to be flippant, but that does not give Mr. Magritz a right to violate the law.
In other words, it doesn't give Mr. Magritz any right to violate the law. That is correct. However, does it give Mr. Keneally a right to violate the law? Does it give Mr. Cordy the right to ignore the possibility that Mr. Keneally actually violated the law? And it comes again to essentially attorneys, county attorneys, or attorney generals using the law for their own benefit and not prosecuting things properly. Where are you going to go? If you try to complain about this now, folks, you know what? You'll end up in jail. This is what the USA Patriot Act is going to be doing to us. This case in Wisconsin stinks. I think it does link back to a vendetta that Mr. Attorney James Doyle has against possibly Mr. Magritz and a bunch of pro-lifers. It's been attorneybusters.com. This is Gene 40. Turn in next week. We didn't have a chance to play Kathleen Cryer's interview. We'll do it next week. It's a great book, Case Against Lawyers, and boy, it's got to be a huge book. Thank you, folks. Bye-bye.
What you say?